Dear Father, I want to thank you again for camp meeting and all the different stuff that we can learn here. And we want to thank you that we have the opportunity to look into this stuff today. We're going to look at fire and how we can get fire, even if we don't have a match. So we want you to come here and be with us and put a smile on our face and help us learn things today. That's what we pray in Jesus' name. Amen. Okay, today is the day when usually when I cover this subject, everybody goes, ooh and ah. Okay, because how do you start a fire if you don't have a match? Now, you know, we already talked about, God's people are going to get the signal from the Holy Spirit, and they're just going to leave. And we kind of set a little urgency there because Jesus told us it was urgent. So if you're on your housetop, you're not even going to get stuff. If you're out in your field, you're not going to go back. And we kind of learned why there's urgency today in that we know that they can shut a whole city down in 10 minutes. Okay? If that God knows that they're going to shut that city down, he's going to say, you need to get out now. And if you move now, you'll get out in time. Okay? And so when that happens, you may not even have a chance to go get some matches or even a fire starter or whatever. And if you're out there in the wilderness, then, well, how in the world am I going to purify my water and cook my stuff? And, you know, so today we're actually going to go over different techniques. Now, today we're only going to be able to just scratch the surface. Okay, we're going to, you know, you're going to want a big drink and we're just going to wet your whistle, they call it, you know. And there are several areas that have lots of different kinds of fire in each area. And we'll cover some of the areas. We're going to look at solar just a little bit. Okay, there's a bunch of things you can do solar-wise with the sun. And, you know, you can do chemical. And normally I don't even cover chemical when I'm doing wilderness survival, because the stuff you need to do it, the chances of you getting it is 0.99% maybe. So I don't even cover that in that. there's electrical. Now there are some things, we're not going to touch on that today, but usually a lot of times I get a chance to actually demonstrate several of these live. But we can't demonstrate fires here today live, okay? So, you know, I usually do several of them live, and a lot of times I learned this one little trick from a fire extinguisher salesman and a piece of steel wool and a 9-volt battery. He says, everybody's got a kitchen drawer, this is their junk drawer, and stuff goes in there, and you slide the junk drawer, and all you do is you take that 9-volt battery and you touch it, and this thing is glowing. You blow it hard, and it'll ignite all kinds of stuff. And there have been a lot of houses that burned down just because of that, okay? So we're not going to touch on that today except for what I just did. But then we've got spark, okay? That's the way the old mountain men used to do. And even back before them, there was techniques. And hopefully I won't talk too much. We'll have time. Ray can show us how to do some of the really old type of fire. Something you can't do if you go to the other schools, they tell you, you know, you can't make fire with two stones. Well, if we have enough time, we'll have Ray go ahead and do that for us, okay? And then we're going to get into the friction fires. Compressed air, we're going to show that one too, okay? Friction fires are the hardest ones to do, and they're the hardest ones to learn. And so people say, well, then how come you teach them? Well, if you're out there and you don't have anything, those are probably the ones that you're going to be able to find materials to make, is the friction fires. And so we teach those. And I have a bunch of stuff out on the table after we're all done for show and tell, and you can kind of look things over. So, but we're going to do a lot. And again, remember Matthew 6:33. It's a promise that Jesus gave us, and he will take care of his people. And if he gives us a chance to learn, we should do that. Okay, first thing you have to do if you're going to do a fire is you got to have some tinder. You got to have something that you're going to set on fire. And when we do fires, we do them in stages, okay? Especially a matchless fire. You're going to start out with one thing, and you're going to move that to another, and so on. You're going to maybe catch a ray of the sun on something that is just smoldering. And then you're going to increase that until you actually get to flame. Sometimes multiple stages, you know. If we get a chance, Ray, it actually takes 3 stages for him to get flame. All right. So anyways, we're going to do it in stages. And sometimes our tinder bundle is set up that way as well. You know, well, we're going to see how we can get some of these little tops out here. They're all fluffy. And cattails, you guys know cattails. When cattail fluff goes, it goes and it's done. Well, you got to have that sitting on something else. And when it goes, then it ignites that. See, so you got stages. And then that'll ignite something else. We'll blow that into a flame. So anyways, we're going to do stages. And I set up a little sheet of notes for me, and I left it at home. So anyways, I've done this over and over and over again with the sea. So anyways, we're going to do a bunch on the screen today because, you know, that can cover some ground. But again, there's so much more. So this will give you a good idea.
This is our tinder section. I want to show you different ways of getting tinder bundle made to catch a fire. You know, remember we talked about how to do matchless fires in stages. And there are many things that you can use out there in Mother Nature to actually build a tinder bundle. And what you're trying to do is make some really small, like almost hair even. And one of the easiest ways is just a piece of cedar. And you can take cedar bark, you can fray it up. That makes a really nice tinder bundle. It'll catch very nicely. Make a bundle like that. Sometimes you can find dead trees. These are the aspen type trees here. And when they're dead and the bark's just about ready to fall off the inside layer, which cedar does that as well, will end up making a really good fiber. And you notice how this is fraying apart. And what you'd end up doing with this is kind of, you can even cut it off there. And then you tear these apart like this. Make sure they're dry. If they're not, you got to set them in the sun. Then you can roll them in your hands. It'll help bring them down to a really small paper. You keep rolling that. And that could work pretty good for a tinder bundle. There are times when you can use a pounding technique. Now this is, right here is the oak bark. And you get oak bark and you got the crusty outside. And then you got this campion layer on the inside, this layer here. And that layer you can actually use a pounding technique. You know, right now that's not a really good tinder bundle, but you can actually take and pound it and separate those fibers. Stages. And a lot of times your tinder bundle will be your second stage. You're going to end up catching your flame or your sun or anything with something else. This is a char cloth. You go over, we're in Campfire series will have a link where you can actually see how we make this charcoal. This is actually a cotton cloth. This is what the mountain men used to use. It's a cotton cloth that we end up burning it, but we start it for oxygen as we do that. And then it turns out this is my first choice for catching sparks. That's a very good thing to use. The mountain men used to use the charcoal and the flint and steel. And I'll show you a flint and steel on the other section there. So we're talking about that. Now, charcoal would be used for a first stage. You know, we're going to catch a spark with that. And if we're in a survival situation, we may not have charcoal. And you got to have a fire in order to make charcoal. So is there things that are out there in Mother Nature that we can use in place of the charcoal? And the answer is yes. There are two fungi that grow. It's very helpful. This one right here is called the horse's hoof fungus. And this fungus here, you'll notice that this is the part that grows to the tree. And this is the bottom part. And then on top, we got this really crusty layer. And this crusty layer, once we cut that away, we find this really soft, chamois-type layer. See how that? With just my fingernail, and once it's dried, I can fray that up. And that is an excellent tinder as well for even catching spark. And that works pretty good on that stuff. And that little layer, you know, is usually not very thick. As you can see here, that it's only about that thick. And what I've done here is I've actually cut away the crusty surface, and I've cut away the underneath part. And this is the good stuff right here. And this is what you'd use. Now, this works pretty good too. You can find some that's a little more flexible. We'll let him zoom in on this. If I tear it, a lot of times it will tear apart with a frayed end. See how that looks like frayed end there. And those are really good. You can use that the same way you would use charcoal. Flint and steel fire, these will catch sparks quite well. You can use this in solar as well. It'll catch the suns of the rays of the sun and do pretty good. My actual favorite for solar is another fungi. And this here grows on white birch. And when you look at it, and we'll show you how to go harvest this here on this section here in tinderwood. We'll go harvest some of this. But when you see it, it's going to look all black like that. It looks charred. And that's just the way it grows. Now, the good stuff that we're going to use is on the inside. And it's this light brown stuff. And if you go over to the solar section, you'll see I light several of these chunks of chaga. And get them going with the sun in different ways. And so this is the sweet stuff here. And so we'll show you how to get a hold of that. And there are other things you can use as well. A lot of times these will be a second stage that you'll have to go to a third stage as well. This is a thistle top here. Any plant that makes these fuzzy things, you can use the fuzzy things and they'll catch spark really well. Everybody's familiar with the milkweed. And that works pretty well as well. And a lot of times, though, they go really fast. So when they catch, they burn quick. You got to have a third stage to go with it. I want to show you, you know, it's good to go out and actually make tinder bundles so that you can learn how to do it. But, and that's good to practice those. But a lot of times you want to practice your fire. And if you just want to practice your fire, I did a demonstration. I was teaching up at a camp one night. And I did 27 fires in one day. Well, if I had to go out and find 27 tinder bundles, it would take me a lot of hours just to do that. And so if you want to practice your fire, here's what you're going to do. You're going to go to your hobby store, and you're going to go to their macrame section. And this is macrame rope here. And macrame rope is jute, which is a plant fiber. And so it behaves itself just like all this other stuff that you're going to find out there. And so if you want to practice your fires, this is the way to do it. Go get some macrame rope, and then I usually cut it into lengths, 6 to 8 inches or so. And then, like we mentioned in our talk on fires themselves, you want a lot of edges. And so I go ahead and separate these down to the smaller parts here. And then I roll those so that they open up. And then I usually give them just a little tug. And then I can fray those into what looks like a hairball. Okay, so we got to fray those up like that. Now, when I get that whole piece done, this is what it's going to look like here. And I use these to practice my fire. I use these to demonstrate. And so these are pretty good little pieces here. You can use that. Okay. Usually what I do with the chaga is I'll harvest a bunch, and then I'll just get some of the best stuff, and I'll throw it in a bag, and then I have that ready to go. And so what we want to do now is actually go and show you how to harvest the chaga, and then we'll also show you one of the ways that I found easiest to get these as well, these horsehair fungus. So we'll go ahead and do that.
Actually, we're not going to do that. Okay, we're going to take a look at how to do a fire set. Okay, a lot of these things you're going to have to put all your skills together to actually get some flame. And when you get to that point, you want that flame to go ahead and work. And if your fire set that you've set is poor, you can lose it. And then you got to go all, through all the work again to get flame again. So it's very important to actually, well, I dealt with the Pathfinders for a lot of years. And we had an event where they had to come in and their group, you know, they had to actually take and go find materials. And they had one match. And they had to set their fire and burn a string off. There were times when clubs were there for a half an hour and still couldn't burn the string off. Okay, so this is very important to learn how to set a fire.
Show you guys how to set a fire, and it'll give you the best possible chance of success. Moisture is one thing that'll definitely make you fail. Another possible thing is cold ground. If we're up there in Alaska or Canada or something, and we're in 65 below, the ground is really cold. And that alone can cause failure of getting your fire going. So what I want to do is actually show you things that you can do that will give you the best possible chance of getting a fire. And what we do to wet ground, here we got a little pit made, but you don't have to. You can just move all the stuff that's going to combust away. And if the ground is wet, now like we've had a lot of rain around here, and this ground's pretty wet. But what you're going to do is you're going to make yourself a little platform. You want dry wood for that. And the best way to get dry wood is to get something that's dead, that's standing. And if the wood is on the ground, it'll soak up moisture and it'll totally fill the piece of wood with moisture. And that's not good. If you get something that's in the air, then that dries out. Now, sometimes you'll get rain and the rain will end up, you know, even if you rained all day, you'll get wet on the outside. Now, if that's the case, you can go ahead and shave these down and get to the drier stuff. And so that's what you would do if you were in that situation. So I like to make a platform because then that ends up being a barrier between either cold or wet. And you want the good dry stuff. So here we'll have a platform. Now the platform not only is an insulation between whatever's in the ground, it also does another thing in that it allows air to come into your fire. It gives channels so that that can take place. And another thing that'll happen is if you build your fire right on top of these will start burning and become coals for you fairly quickly. And so that's helpful as well. So I always do a platform. And then you want all your materials here together. And one of the things I can't stress strong enough is to have lots and lots of very small dead twigs. And then from there, then you want to go ahead and go up to your larger, and then larger, and then actually get into your big stuff. And so that's the way you're going to do your fire. And you want them all here, ready to go, before you start. Because once you start, if you do it right, this thing can be in a fire in just a matter of a few minutes. So what we'll do is we'll go ahead and start one here. We'll try. We're going to do a mattress fire. I'm going to do a ferro rod this time. And I'm going to show you how you can use birch bark. Now, you'll remember over in our talk on fire, we told you that edges start easier than surfaces. And right here, we got a lot of surface. So we need to make a bunch of edges. And so that's what I'm going to do here, is make a bunch of edges. And I usually cut this like this. Start in with our materials, and the idea is we'll have a fire here in just a few minutes. So what I'm going to do is use the ferro rod here and see what we can do. There we go. I'm going to move this in here. I'm going to get this stuff going. Builds, then we add the bigger and bigger, and then all we need is a little bit of thyme and the marshmallows.
Ferro rod, ferro serum is, they've been around for a long time, the cigarette lighters, that's ferro serum in there. And they make these rods, and I encourage everybody to get one and just put it in your pocket. I've got one in my pocket right now, but I was going to try and dig it out, but I didn't want to disturb our stuff. That's all right, Dan. No. You know what? You can get them. You can get them a lot of places. And actually, I got a box of them. Maybe I'll bring them and make them available. But if you got one of those and you just carry it in your pocket, if you get in a survival situation or when the Holy Spirit says it's time to go, fire becomes a whole lot easier if you got one of those. You know, you can get them wet and you still can get fire out of it. You know, try that with a box of matches, right? You know, a lot of your camping stores are carrying them now, your magnesium block and stuff like that. And you can get them on the internet, but you got to watch. Some of them will sell them really cheap, okay, a couple bucks. But you got to look at the fine print because it'll say slightly used. Well, how much is slightly used? You know, so you got to watch that, okay? That is not a flint and steel, okay? We'll show flint and steel a little bit. Flint and steel is actually flint and a piece of rock, a flint, and a high-carbon steel. Yeah, that was a ferrule rod, ferrule serum. They got a lot of different names for them, fire rods and stuff. Here's another little cool little thing.
The way they used to do this a long time ago, it was done over in areas that have bamboo. Well, I'm from Michigan. We don't have bamboo here, but probably the closest plant that we would have like bamboo is this Japanese knotweed. And bamboo grows in sections, so this Japanese knotweed does too as well. And so it will help us understand somewhat how they did that. We can see this a little longer piece, and you can see these segments like this. And what they would do is they would take and they would cut off a segment, and they would have the hollow part on one end and one section that was still connected on the other. So here's our hollow part here. And then they would have the end that was solid. And then what they would do is they would take this and they would drill a hole in the bottom like we got here. And what they would do is they would grab some tinder, some really small tinder. And a lot of times they would use an old dry punky wood and things like that. They would put it on a rock, on a smooth rock. They would take the little hole that they had and they would put that right over the top of that. And then they would have another one, another piece of bamboo that they would take, and they would wrap a rag around the end. They would smear some fat on there for lubrication. They would stick that in the end until it was really tight. Then they would take a rock and they would smack it. And what happens when you compress air fast and hard, it will actually flash. It'll burn up the oxygen that's in it. So when they did this, and they would smack it, this would flash in here, and then they would pull it apart, pull it off, their tinder here would be smoldering, and then they would take that, put it in their tinder bundle, and blow that into a flame. And fire pistons is what they're called today. Now, a German engineer by the name of Diesel, he saw one of these in action. And that's what gave him the idea to go and design the diesel engine. So today we have modern ones. Now if you want to make a fire piston, they have plans on the internet. And this is one that I put together quite a few years ago. And you can, this one actually is you can do them out of plexiglass, you can do them out of woods. Some guys will do them out of a horn on an animal. This is an old maglite. And take the maglite apart and just work on it. You can store char cloth on top. This is the piston here. facility. And the plans actually what you get from the hardware store. And this fits in here. And then you can turn this up there now and smack it. And you'd end up having your tinder in there and you'd be good to go. So this one does work. And it's fairly cheap. So if you want to make one, you can do that. Look on the internet. Fire pistons. Plans. Nowadays, we got companies that make them. This one's kind of a Cadillac. And so what we do is we have the cylinder part of the hole here. And then we have this part, which is called a piston. Now, the piston's going to have a seal on it. This one's an O-ring. Someone will use O-rings. And someone will actually use some string and go around there. Now, you need to actually lubricate. One of the things I found that worked really well is a chapstick. And you just take the chapstick and kind of smear it on there. You don't have to do it every time. And you get some of that on there, and then you can work it with your finger. And it works as a real, real good lubricant for these things. Now, in the very end of this, you're going to have a dimple. This one's carved in there. Right now, I've got that dimple full of charcoal. You can use different things, fungi and stuff, chaga that we talked about over in our tinder section. And also, you could use the horse of fungus that we talked about. There's a lot of little things out here that are dry that you can get to ignite with one of these things. And so, right now, we're going to use charcoal. Object is we're going to put this together and we're going to smack it, and inside here that will flash. Hopefully we'll get our charcoal going, and then we're going to use a toothpick. We're going to take our toothpick and use that to pull the glowing charcoal out, put it in our tinder bottle, and then we'll see if we can get a flame from that in the tinder bottle. So that's the idea, that's what we're going to do. We'll see how many times it takes before I actually get this to go. A lot of times I get it one. That's a pretty good one here. So let's see if we can get fire from compression. There we go. One fire there, you see that on the end. We'll go ahead and put that into our tinder bottle. See if we can blow this into a flame. There we go, we got fire compression. And what you do is you'd have your other pieces ready to go. And as soon as you got fire, you put them in your really small stuff and then work to the bigger and bigger until you had your fire built. And so at this point, you get to go practice.
Here we go. Here's one of the things we can do with the sun. Now, a lot of us have played with a magnifying glass, and that works. And this is along the same line, only it's the other way around. And you may have a flashlight.
This is our fire series. We're going to show you how you can make a fire using the sun. Most survival situations are day hikers or hunters that get lost, and a lot of them will have a flashlight with them. We can actually make fire using your flashlight. The lens here, we're going to use one of those and see if we can do a fire here with it. What I want you to notice is the bulb here, right there, that filament, that's the sweet spot for this thing. That's the way they've engineered this. That's right where you want your tinder. We're going to use a piece of tinder fungus or chaga. And we're going to see if we can get that going. I'm going to go ahead and take this bulb out of here now. Set that down here. That's where you want your tinder to sit. It's right there where that bulb was. Now, I use these rings here. If you can look inside and I can move this, you can use the rings to tell where you're in focus or not. And when I get this
draw those rings right down there, and the minute I hit it, and get it focused just right. My son isn't that powerful right now. Right in there. There we get her going. And once I get this started, then we gotta let that grow a little bit. And as it grows, I'm gonna put it in this jute bundle here. That'll get hot here pretty quick. Then we'll try and blow that into a flame.
I've ignited a lot of things in that little flashlight.
Okay, that's starting to get warm now. Let's put it in here. Let's see what we can do. From the sun.
Now everybody's gonna go tear their flashlight apart and go try that out, right? Yeah. Okay. Let's look at spark. We're just giving you a little taste of the different areas. This one's a little longer here, so we'll get that one going here.
This is our fire series again. We're going to look at how to make fire from a spark. And we've got a couple different ways that that can be done, from modern types, man-made stuff on over to the old primitive skills. And we'll look at first the new one that, well, it's not really that new, it's been around for a long time. It's called the ferro rock, ferro series. Man-made metal, and it actually gets very excited when you scrape it off. And you can get different grades of this. This one's a military grade, so those sparks are about 5,000 degrees. And you can get them on down to the lower grade ones that are about 3,500. And that's still a pretty hot spark. And you can do a lot of different materials with these things. And touch a little one off here. There's one that you can get in a lot of the camping stores, and even in like Meijer and Walmart. This is a magnesium block, and the idea with magnesium block is you scrape off a pile of magnesium. And magnesium, once it starts, you just can't get it to stop. And then a lot of them will have a ferro rod on the other side of it, and you use the ferro rod to go ahead and get the magnesium started. So that's a little handy in a little way as well. And some people put them on their keychain and have them there. So this one, I put a little hook on, and I hook it to my belt. And when I need it, I'll unhook it, use it, and then it goes right back on my belt. And the nice thing about these is, even if you get them wet, you can still get fire from them. So they're really handy. They're good to have. And I'll show you a little bit here. We'll see if you never guarantee a matchless fire. We'll see if we can just touch it off. I mean, it works really, really easy on these, as you can see. Now, there's quite a few different things you can touch off with a spark. We're going to later on get into the flint and steel, which the mountain men used to use. But when you get into our tinder section, you'll find out how to actually find and use these different fungi that grow on white birch and beech. And this horsehoe fungus in this section underneath that. This is the chaga. And this stuff's really good. That works real well. You can also use for spark these. This right here, I harvested the other day. It's tops to the thistle. It grows, and that will grab a spark really easy. And then everybody's familiar with the cattail top. that works as well. And these are just some of the things. Any of the plants that create that fuzzy stuff can be used. And so just keep that in mind as you're out looking. And a lot of times the fuzzy stuff, you're going to need something else right behind it, some really lightweight grasses or something. Yeah, because they'll go and they'll go in a hurry, but they can set something else off and that works pretty good. So these ferro rods, a lot of different names for them, fire steels, and some people call them a flint rod. And so there's just numerous names for them, but they're actually made out of ferro serum, and so I always just call them a ferro rod. The old primitive guys that would do spark would be your old mountain men. And they would do what they call a flint and steel fire. And in order to, the pieces for that would be a steel. This is a steel here. It has to be high carbon steel, and it has to be hardened. And the old blacksmith, you know, if you can find a blacksmith, a lot of them still know how to make these. You can use an old file as well. Those work. But the old blacksmiths, they still know how to make these strikers. So go catch them from there. You can get them on the internet as well. A lot of times they're a little more expensive on the internet than the blacksmiths are. Well, then you have the other piece. It's called flint. Now, flint, we have flint from different areas, and flint from different areas actually has different colors. And this flint here, it has a white color, and it actually came from Ohio. And then another section of Ohio where it gets closer over there to Missouri and Indiana and stuff, it'll start turning this color. And then when you actually get down into the lower parts and even near Kentucky and Tennessee and over to Missouri and Arkansas, it all gets this orangey type color to it. And then usually when you get down near Arkansas and Missouri border, sometimes you'll start finding it where it's turning black color. And this is actually Kentucky black here. And Kentucky black has little sparkles in it. Then this is Oregon here. This is another black. Now, flint doesn't always look this color when you first see it. You notice that the outside stone of this one was all white, but then when you break inside, then you find the flint. And this is one that I got out of Missouri, and you can see that it's all orange. And we see this section here is actually our flint. And you can break this up, and it works quite well to do stuff with. Now, I do have a piece of flint here. This one actually came from Africa, and their flint is white and red. And this African flint actually works better than what I've gotten here in the United States. And what it happens is the carbon that's in the steel mixes with the silica that's in the stone. Now, the stone has to have silica. Not every stone is going to spark. But flint has a lot, so it works really well. We also have agates that can work. Quartz can some as well, but it's a really short spark and short-lived. So you got to be pretty lucky. And so flint and steel works quite well. Well, we need something else as well. And the mountain men used to use what we call char cloth. You know, if you go over our tinder section, you'll see char cloth, and you'll even see how we can make it. The char cloth is basically a cloth, mostly cotton, that's been charred and it's been starved for oxygen as we do that. And you can see how we do that over there in that section. We'll go ahead and see if we can get a flint and steel fire going. And a lot of times I'll carry mine in my bag and pieces will break up. And so I'll just take some of the broken pieces that are too small and I'll just stick them in my tinder bundle. And you'll see tinder bundles over in that other area as well. Then what I'm going to do is I'm going to take a piece of this. I'm going to set it right near the edge of my flint. And I forgot to show you the Michigan flint. I'm from Michigan, and we're in Michigan right now. Michigan flint ranges a little bit in color from a whitish gray, kind of like an eggshell, to even a little darker. And then there's even some in Michigan that's like this. And this one here I found right over there in the rice store. And I have made fire with that. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to stick this right on the edge of this piece of flint. And then you want to take your steel and you want to strike that in such a way that you make sparks. Now, I always teach everyone when they start to do this to actually start from their ear when you strike. You want, if you start from your ear, then you'll get a good strike on it. And they tend to, when you first start, you tend to just take a short stroke and you end up just scratching the stone. And that doesn't do it very well. One of the things I like to do is, you know, get a good strike and start from your ear. And then I like to, if you zoom in on this, I like to pick a sharp edge, especially a point, like that point right there. If you hit those, they tend to spark better. And so what we're going to do is we're actually going to strike this and make sparks. Now, depending on how lucky I am as to how many strikes it takes before we get one of those sparks to hit the charcoal. When it hits the charcoal, it's going to just start the charcoal to go ahead and burn. And when that happens, then I'm going to go ahead and put it in my tinder bundle. And then we'll wrap it inside, and then we'll see what we can do about blowing that into a flame. So we'll try a flint and steel. This is the way the mountain men used to do. Now, for their tinder, as they would have a pouch that they would keep inside their pocket. And as they were doing their walks during the day, they would be looking for old bird's nests that weren't being used, and they would take the inside of that. They would find mouse nests if they ran across those. Those work well. And you can find old dead trees where the bark is ready to fall off, and you can strip that off, and you can pull strips from the inside of that, and you can make tinder that way by rolling it up. So I'm going to use the jute. We'll talk about that over there in the tinder section. So we'll see if we get a flint and steel fire, and then we'll talk about one that schools across the United States say you can't do, and that's how to make fire from two stones. So let's see if we can get a flint and steel fire going here. Let's see how lucky I am. Okay, I got some started here right in the corner. And see a little glowing red there. And transfer that over here before I burn my fingers. Let's see if we can blow this into a flame. Steel. And I do want to talk a little bit, because even prehistory, before the mountain men were doing flint and steel, we know that from the history records that they used to use what we call iron pyrite or fool's gold. Zoom in on that. And this is fool's gold here, and they would use flint and fool's gold together. And when you strike those two together, you'll get a spark. And the spark is not very bright, and it's not real hot. It's not as hot as what these others are. But they used to drop these into different types of fungus that we have here, and they were able to actually get a fire going. Now, my pieces are too crumbly. I'm going to have to get some more. Sometimes you can get this stuff in harder form like this, only it's too small for me to hang on to and still strike it. And sometimes you can find it embedded in another rock, like this is. And I've gotten some bigger pieces like this, and the drawback was I used some charcoal. And I was striking, I was getting sparks. And I dropped sparks down on my charcoal, and it would start. then the dust from the other stone, part of the stone, would go down there and put it out. So I am going to continue. I've seen Ray Mears, you can see him on the internet. I've seen him make fire with us twice. And so even though they teach you across the United States anyways that you can't make fire from two stones, you can if you use iron pyrite and a piece of flint and good timber. And so this is our section on fire from a spark.
Okay, we're going to demonstrate the bow drill here. And one of the reasons why I do bow drill is because here in Michigan, our humidity is really high all the time. We're surrounded by all the lakes. And so this is the actual method that the Indians in this area chose to make their fires, was the bow drill. There are a lot of different friction fires that we could do, but this is the one that they chose, and so this is one I like to demonstrate in this area. And so we'll look at bow drill, and then we may have enough time to see Ray go ahead and make a fire with two stones.
Okay, we're going to see if we can do a bow drill fire here. And here's what I was talking about. I actually put my tinder underneath. You're going to want to separate it. It's really humid. We had 70% humidity here today. So this is going to be one of those times that's going to be harder than the other times. So I'm also using something as a barrier between the ground because we had a lot of rain. And this ground is really moist. If I put my tinder right on it, it'll suck that moisture out of the tinder. And it's almost nil then to getting the fire going. So what I want to do is show you, when you load these, you want to spin these in. And what I want you to see is that the spindle is on the outside of the string. I could load it the other way, and if you do that, it ends up rubbing on the bow itself, and you have a lot more friction than what you want. The friction you want is right there. You don't want any other friction. Any other friction just makes this even harder, and there's a lot of work to this. When you learn how, you end up sweating and stuff. And so the friction you want is right there. And one of the things I do is on this end, if you have it totally flat, you get a lot more heat. And if you have a higher or a greater angle on this, then it'll drill more. So if you drill more, you get a lot less heat. So what you want to do is try and find the optimum angle so that you don't drill too much, but you also have heat. And if you had it all the way flat, what'll happen is it won't stay put. It'll track off and stuff. You'll end up wandering away from your notch, and then your coal that you're trying to build will build up around the outside edge, and it won't work. So there's an actual threshold there. And I find about 15 to 30 degrees is a good little angle to do these on, and about like that. And so that's one of the things you're going to be looking for as well. When I do this, my arm is, even though I got a pretty good sized arm, it is not strong enough to hold this. And so what I end up doing is I end up using my knee. And I'm going to put my foot on here like this, and I end up using my knee and my arm to hold this thing in place because there's a lot of pressure on this drill. And so what we'll do now is we'll go ahead and see if we can get a coal built. And we're going to leave it in the socket until we actually see red. If we get that point, we'll go ahead and pull it out of there, and we'll see if we can blow it into a flame. Now my tinder's sucking up moisture from the air. We'll see what we can do, though. And okay. All right, now at first, I'm just going to hold it here. I'm going to warm that socket up. And now I'm going to start bearing down. Got some smoke started.
long strokes. Okay, I think I might have a call. There's the red. Take it out of here gently. There we got fire from friction. There's a bow drill fire there. That was really tough. You'll notice I almost lost that coal. Even though it was in the socket, the humidity here was really trying to put that thing out. And so when you do these, just go ahead and try that trick because it just helps you out. You know, leave it in the notch in the, in, until it actually shows up red. And then you'll have a lot more success than running into those other troubles. There's so many things that can make this go wrong. Just that little bit will help you so much more. So there's a fire by friction.
Usually the little softer stuff, if you could do it with oak, but you got to bear down on there and peel off dust, you know. So your really hard stuff, you know, that's going to make you work a lot. So, you know, cottonwood works really well, and we got that where we're at. You know, I've done it with cedar, and I've done it with aspen family and stuff. And so, you know, I got a lot of that around. I was told way back when I was younger, I was told, well, you can't do it with pine. And so I just took their word at it. Well, then I was teaching some people up in the UP, and I went up there, and here they are using pine, and they were getting some fire. And I thought, whoa, wait a minute. Now, I was told you couldn't do it because of the pitch. And then I got thinking about it. Well, maybe they couldn't do it because it was their technique. It wasn't the material they were using, you know. So there's a lot of, I think you could probably do it with just about any wood, but those harder ones are going to make you work a lot harder in order to do it. So, okay, let's see. Fire from two stones. This is Ray Mears here, and we have just enough time to see that, and then we'll do a few question and answer. And then we'll head out to the table because we got a lot more out there that we can just show up down for.
What I've got here is a little bit of horse's hoof fungus, which occurs on dead birch trees in Scotland, and I'm just fraying that up, ready for making fire. That's my tinder. It's very fine. It comes up like cotton wool. And what I need to do is to generate a spark to drop into this, to get this to catch light and start smouldering. To make the spark, I'm going to use a method that we know was used in prehistory. I'm going to use this. It's one of those nodules of iron pyrites I collected earlier. Remember I said that nobody's really certain how it's formed? Well, my favourite story, came straight from the mouth of a professor of geology, no less, is that it could even be the blood of dinosaurs. Well, that might be unlikely, but that's my favourite story, without a doubt. And I reckon they must have been dragons, because you get good sparks off of this. It's interesting material with a new nodule of this, newly collected. That brown colour is an oxide layer. It's like rust on the surface. And I've got to scrape back behind that before I get decent sparks. Now, to strike this, I'm going to use a piece of flint. And I've got a blade here I struck off earlier. Ah, I can start to smell a slight burning smell. It smells like a cigarette lighter. And that's a good sign. It means I'm getting sparks. Now, the sparks that come off of this are very small and they're very low temperature. They're dull red colour. So sometimes you can't always see them in daylight. You can get that smell of burning. You know you're getting somewhere. Of course, if you're using this every day on a regular basis, it's very quick because you don't have much oxide layer built up. I'm getting a good smell of burning now. That's good. Getting better sparks. Just trying to get them to fall in the right place. There we go. There's one in there now. It takes a while. Wonderful thing about this tinder is it's so combustible. Wonderful. That's just going to grow now. You can see there's a bit of a breeze here. So I've brought another fungus with me. This is a King Alfred's cake of a cramp ball. It's another name of an ash tree. Daldinia concentrica. And this is wonderful for firelighting. If I break this in half, you can see all these concentric rings in the middle. If I ignite this, it'll burn like a charcoal briquette. And I could have ignited it with one of these sparks, but it's more certain with this really fluffy tinder here. So I'll add that to that and get that tool to catch light now. Let's see. That's good. Now, what I'm going to do with that is I'm going to put that into bracken. Business. All I need now is the shellfish.
Look at that. You can't do that, by the way. At least the rest of the schools tell you you can't do that. But Ray's one of those that he can do it anyways, you know. So he's a pretty awesome guy. He knows a lot of things and very good talent. So, well, did you guys see anything today that you'd never seen before? You just get a little flavor of the different areas that you can make fire. And then in these areas, with the exception of compressed air, there are all different kinds of things you can do in each area. And so today we could just kind of, like I said, just wet your whistle. You know, give you a little scratch on the surface on what can be done. And so we have just a few minutes. We could take some questions. Yeah? Okay. No. It does grow in the UP. I've seen it up there. Japanese knotweed. Actually, it's an edible plant. Okay. And anybody here like asparagus? Anybody like lemon juice on their asparagus? You would love Japanese knotweed because that's what it tastes like. Okay, and when you see it come up in the spring, you're going to want to harvest it right away because it'll grow about 2 foot every week. So, yeah, it really goes. So, but right now, you're going to find it about this tall. It's going to have long things, and it's going to have little white flowers coming out the bottom. And just before this period, you could actually cut the stalks, shave them down, cook them, and use it for a rhubarb substitute. Okay, see, now we're getting into well, tomorrow's food, isn't it? So anyways, any other questions? Oh, Dan's got a microphone.
Got a mic, yeah. Testing.
Okay, we got a question here.
Needles, do they smoke too much for tinder or
what? Usually, one of the things I didn't get a chance to, you're going to find, and usually what I'll do is I'll take a piece of paper and I'll tear it off, and I have a big lighter. And I start the lighter, and then I tell you, there's our first matchless fire. Okay. And I tell you that surfaces, actually edges, start easier than surfaces. Okay? And so I'll take that flame and put it under the surface, and I'll just walk right on off there at the same rate, and when it hits the edge will start, but the surface does not. So pine needles are not quite fine enough to go ahead and catch like you want them to. You can get them to go, but you know, it's a little harder. So you wanna think about making your tinder a lot like hair, because that's a lot of edges instead of surface. Okay? So keep that in mind. Edges start easier than surfaces. That's why I took that piece of birch bark and I cut it up. You know, it was a big surface at the beginning, but once I got done cutting it up, there was a whole bunch of edges. And then when I hit it with a spark, then it takes off. There's one, a couple of them back here. Well, actually, the one I had there, that was a Gerber. Right now I use one from that is more like Ray Mears' style. If you go online, you can get Ray Mears' knives, but there's like $400 last time I checked in the crossover, and there's a 10-year waiting list. And so I found some from El Salvador that has the exact same shape that he has, which is great. And you know, a lot of guys want this great big huge knife. Well, when you start getting into a lot of this stuff and you're making things, you know, the bushcraft they call it, when you're making things, those great big knives I found, for me, they're just too clumsy. And so I like a shorter knife, you know. And so I use those shorter ones myself. But I always like a higher carbon blade knife. You can get high carbon or you can get the stainless steel. Okay, the stainless steel won't rust, but it won't hold an edge near like what the high carbon does. And if I do have a knife, a high carbon blade, and actually, you know, a wilderness survival guy when he carries a steel striker with him. Okay, but if I have my knife and I can find some stone that has silica in it, I can make fire with that, you know. But yeah, I carry a striker in one pocket, and then I carry a ferro rod in this pocket. So, anyways, but that's kind of, that was a Gerber there, but Gerber, yeah, you know. Bear Grylls, the one that does a lot of those, but if you get the one that got his name on it, they're a lot more expensive.
You were saying you wanted hair-like substances for tinder, so in a pinch, can hair be used as tinder?
Use what now as tinder?
Use like your actual hair as tinder, like cut off a piece of hair and use it.
You know, it's hard to get hair to actually burst into flame, but it could smolder and get something else going. Actually, what I would do is take my knife, stretch my pants, and I would keep going until I got a bunch of lint. That goes pretty quick and pretty easy. Okay? You can dig in your pocket and maybe pull some out. Okay, so that's still something too. All kinds of stuff.
Can you use one of them Gerber knives and then a flint, like a rock, a flint rock?
Yeah.
And the Gerber knife?
If it's a high carbon blade, then you can get the, and what you're going to want to do is you got your sharp edge, and it takes you a long time to get a nice edge on those, you know. So what you're going to do is use the back side of the knife. You're going to use the other end because then you're not wrecking your edge. Okay? As long as it's a high carbon blade and you got a rock that has silica in it. Okay? Flint does. We have some flint here in Michigan, but we also have, you know, agate, and we also have a lot of quartz, and quartz has it in it as well. So, Okay, we can take maybe one more, and then we're going to have to close off because we got another group coming in. I see a hand over here there, Dan. We will do more question and answering out at the table, okay?
One knife that I really like is Mora, and they're high carbon steel.
Okay.
Most of them. The one I have, it starts fires really well.
See? Here we go. Yeah, the high carbon will hold an edge a lot longer, but it will rust, and so that's one of the drawbacks of that one. And that's why they started doing the stainless steel ones. And so you can get the stainless steel, but you're not going to get a spark off of it if you needed it. Okay, so, and the edge will not stay on there as long. But the high carbon ones, you can get a nice edge and it'll stay there a lot longer. But, and you can use it to spark, but it does rust, so you got to take care of that. So, anyways, we need to go close off here, and then we're going to go ahead and move out to the table. I got a bunch of show and tell if you want to look over stuff. And also, we got some DVDs if you guys are interested in those. So let's bow our heads for a word of prayer. Dear Heavenly Father, I want to thank you for all these techniques that are still here, that we still know and can learn, and that we may need in the time of the end there. So help us to remember these things. Help us to practice these things. There's something you have to practice. So help us to give us time to do just that, and help us, encourage us to do that. So be with us, and we thank you very much. In Jesus' name, amen.
This media was brought to you by Audioverse, a website dedicated to spreading God's Word through free sermon audio and much more. If you would like to know more about Audioverse, or if you would like to listen to more sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.